And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to Nerdy Notions with Sasha Kaplan.
Hello, I am Sasha Kaplan. Welcome to the endgame.
And thank you for not blowing out my eardrums when you do your intro this time.
Oh, so dramatic. Because, you know, my intros are so loud. Always.
There have been actually legitimately times for our Power Rangers podcast where because we do like the thing where it's like, I'm Mike Lindenbaum, and I point off to like you or Brian or Ben, and then you just go, I'm Sasha Catlett, like this super high-pitched voice. Literally, when I actually have to go back and listen to the audio to see if I have to cut that one piece out to fix the decibels, it actually, Zoom, thankfully, recognizes the high pitch and semi-mutes it for me.
I'm a soprano. I'm not going to apologize for that. Anyway, we're not here to talk about the high pitch of my voice. We're here for me to rant about Endgame. So when we did the Infinity War review, you and I had a shit list.
Oh, you had a shit list. I was just starting to write down
your list. You were assistant to the shit list, yes.
I'm not trying this time. I'm sorry. There's probably too much to it.
No, that's okay. Where I'm going with this is that I also had a secondary list on that, which was kind of like plot threads I had initially hoped would get addressed in Endgame. Things like Shuri working to remove the Mind Stone from the Vision, Heimdall and the loss of half of the Asgardians, the loss of Xandar, the depth of the Soul Stone. These are things that like fans were hoping that Endgame would address. These are mostly things I kept hoping Endgame would address. I didn't care that much about the inside of the Soul Stone personally. But everything else, these were things that I wanted Endgame to talk about. How many of these things did I get, Michael?
62 of them.
Literally negative 62 of them.
So 75,000 of them. Gotcha.
Yeah. So let's go back to the movie, and then we'll talk about all of the things that I wanted addressed that didn't happen. We open on Clint, which was originally supposed to be at the end of as an after credit scene for Infinity War, but we talked about that last time. So it was moved to the beginning of this film, and it's a very simple scene. Clint is teaching his daughter, Lila, to shoot arrows at a very abused target. And they shoot the arrow, and Laura's in the back with the boys, and they're getting food to eat, and apparently there's something about mustard on...
Well, no, so the mom asked the boys, do you want ketchup or mayo on the hot dogs? And she also poses the same question to Hot Clint and Lila, to which Clint and Lila look at each other going like,
mayo on
who
a
puts
hot dog?
Mayo on a hot dog? Like, it, and the answer to that is no sane person. And then of course the youngest son goes
ketchup.
Like, no, he actually goes mustard, because mustard was never an option given. It was just ketchup and mayonnaise.
I thought it was mustard or mayo, and then he says ketchup.
No, I think it's the other way around.
Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But basically, little baby Nate is learning to catch. The kids are obviously a little bit older since the last time we saw them in
Age of Ultron.
Ooh, that was a while ago, folks. And basically, Hawkeye goes to like retrieve the arrow, and then he turns around, and everybody's gone.
Yeah, and this, you know, as you said, this was originally going to be an end credit scene for Infinity War. We end up seeing that as an end credit scene for Ant-Man the Wasp, which I've openly said that should have been the movie right before this one.
Yes,
because what this does is it really sets the tone now. It reminds you because
it's true. Yeah.
Because it's been a year since the events of Infinity War. Now we're going in the Endgame, and that really
sets
the
tone. Well, actually, no. Hold on. For us, yes, it's been a year. In Canada, it has not been a year.
Well, yeah, in Canada, yes, it hasn't been a year. Yes. But for the audience watching this, it's been a year. And
because, you know, audiences just wouldn't have realized otherwise what had occurred, you know, because we're newbies at this. I know. But still. Anyway.
From a storytelling standpoint, they reestablished
the point. Yes. I do have one gripe with this scene, and that is a little bit of shaky cam as Clint is, like, jogging to the rest of the farm to, like, in calling the names of his kids and his wife. The shaky cam there was unnecessary, but anyway.
But it set the tone really well.
Yes. We also have like the thunderstorm music. And in the Marvel intro is like somber.
And it should be noted that for also the Marvel intro, like with Captain Marvel, they did all Stan Lee. If you actually look at the Marvel sign as they're going through it, everyone who got dusted in Infinity War was missing from the Marvel intro.
Yep. And there's something about like make it, I have a note here about make it snappy. Anyway, so Nebula and Tony are in outer space. They're actually stuck adrift in outer space. And Nebula learns about fun. They play that like paper airplane.
Oh yeah, paper football.
Whatever.
Yeah, anyway. And where you flick the paper football between the fingers.
Tony interacting with Nebula is just funny because Tony's all jokes all the time, and Nebula just Nebula can crack jokes, but they're very dry, sarcastic jokes, and they are beautiful.
And it's also good because it's starting to show a little bit more of that human side of Nebula.
Yeah, which we don't really get to see a lot of. We then see Tony is kind of recording a message for Pepper through the helmet. He's pretty scrawny. He's dying. It's been about 21, 22 days that they've been in space. And it recaps how they tried to get Quill's ship going. The ship is dead in the water, no food, and the oxygen runs out tomorrow. He was hoping to pull off one last surprise, yada, 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 yada. Nebula watches over as he's sleeping, like she puts him in a chair. It's like really, really depressing. Like you almost think he's gonna die. So there's a scene where he just like passes out and like, well, that's it, Tony's dead. But there's obviously a bright light that wakes him up, and there's a glowy space woman. That is, of course, Captain Carol Marvel.
Carol Marvel?
Yes, that is her name. Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers. This is the aftermath of the scene that we see at the end of Captain Marvel, where she like appears. Yeah. Yeah, we talked about this last
time. And now, you know, as we talked about in the last episode, it now makes sense as to how Captain Marvel's it. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
So Captain Steve America Rogers finally shaves his beard. And then he hears something, and it's Carol delivering a giant ship. And we know Pepper didn't get dusted. She like runs through everybody and hugs Tony. Steve helps Tony to sit off the ship. They kind of lament that neither one of them were able to stop Thanos. And Tony says, I lost the kid. He lost the kid. Pepper's glad to see Tony. Rocket and Nebula hold hands. Like it's a really somber scene of he just kind of sits down next to her and like, they both realize that they're the only ones left. And like,
and it's another human scene for Nebula.
Right. And it's also the fact that like Nebula and Rocket didn't really share too many scenes together, like together until Guardians 2. So it's nice to see kind of that slight progression with their, I don't want to call it a relationship, but with their like, we don't like each other, we don't hate each other, like frenemies developing into friendship more.
Yeah.
23 days, the world government, it's been 23 days since the snap. World governments are in pieces. What remains, the census says that about 50% of all living creatures have been wiped out by Thanos. Now, 50% of all living creatures means cows, pigs, chickens,
cats, dogs,
right? Whales.
Birds. Yeah, which is a huge indicator, as we'll get to at the end of the, the end.
Thanos didn't just wipe out human population. He argued also wiped out a good chunk of resources and thus messing with the ecosystem. And then you kind of makes you wonder, does this also affect because it's random, does this also affect species that are endangered? Did he just like wipe out the eagles with one snap, you know?
Well, if we're talking about the band, the Eagles.
No. I mean, like bald eagles, the symbol of.
You just killed the joke.
Yep, I did. I'm a murderer. It's fine. I murder jokes. Bad jokes. They get murdered. They don't know where Thanos is. Thor is very pissed. Like, we see him a couple times, and he does not say anything. He just looks like he's about to murder somebody.
He also looks like he's about to go into a massive rap battle.
Sure.
You ever see those memes?
It's
him when Tony first sees Thor when he comes back. And, like, you see, like, you know, Thor is in the sweats and stuff like that. He looks like he's almost about to drop like a really heavy rap battle on somebody.
Anyway, and obviously Thor is feeling guilty because he should have stopped Thanos, and, you know, everybody's feeling that way. Rocket is referred to as Build-A-Bear. Rocket, I think, has the single most amount of nicknames in this entire franchise. Everything from a rabbit to a trash panda. Trash panda is still my number one. That is the best nickname. I think somebody called him a cat once.
Can I pet your puppy?
Oh, yeah, Mantis called him a puppy. So he's like everything. And he was referred to as a raccoon at least once. And, like, he is a raccoon, but he's not a raccoon. He definitely has the face of a raccoon and, like, the body of, like, a...
trash panda.
Yeah, which is also a raccoon. But anyway... Tony is very emotional, and Tony starts whining about how he needed Steve, and Steve wasn't there. Like, you literally had a phone you could call him in a moment's notice. You didn't use it. He literally said, if you need me, I will be there at the end of Civil War. So, honestly, screw you, Tony, for, like, not calling. Like, Steve isn't obligated to help you at, like, any whim. Like, this entire situation could have been avoided if you had used your... All right, we're going to end the Steve versus Tony thing because I already ranted about this when we did Civil War. Hashtag Cap was right. Anyway, Tony plays the I told you so suit of armor on the world, but, like, that's stupid. I'm sorry, it's a stupid like... From Tony's perspective, I understand what he's saying, but it's stupid. Because a suit of armor around the world would not have been able to stop Thanos. As we found out with Wakanda, where we had a literal freaking army of amazingly advanced individuals, both intellectually and physically and with tech, they weren't able to stop Thanos. I'm sorry, a suit of armor around the world wouldn't have been able... The only thing it could have done... was maybe warn everybody a little bit earlier. But I don't think a suit of armor would have been able to stop, like, Proxima or somebody. So, like, I'm sorry, Tony, you're wrong. Thanos, they stopped Thanos because Steve was busy, you know, whining about precious freedoms. Those freedoms are not very important. Let's see here. I have, like, 16 pages worth of notes. Like, it's not even funny. We lost and
buckle up, folks.
And this is the part that annoys me. Tony said, we lost and you weren't there. Yeah, he was.
Well, let's take it from Tony's perspective. Tony didn't know that Banner called Steve.
He didn't ask.
Yeah, he didn't ask. So he doesn't even know what Cap was doing.
Except he does, because when Tony says, I couldn't stop Thanos, Steve says, neither could we.
Yeah, but like, but do you think keep in mind, look at Tony's mentality. He is fragile mentally. He's also physically fragile too, because if you notice, he's also lost.
He's very scrawny. He's in an IV. I know.
Yeah. So when you take all those things combined, yeah, he may have been told Steve, but it may not have been registering in there.
That's fair. Anyway, so Tony just basically hands him his arc reactor and, like, here, go after Thanos. And Carol? So I don't know what it is, but Carol Danvers is way better in this movie than she was in her own movie. Maybe because, like, in canon, like, the character has matured in the, like, 20 years between, you know, Captain Marvel and Endgame. But she's way more interesting here than she was in her own movie.
I don't know why. I think it has to be with the fact that she filmed her stuff for Endgame before she filmed Captain Marvel.
I know, but like the writers exchange scripts and everything. So it's just, it's weird. I guess that then makes sense because Russos had read the Captain Marvel script. So they knew kind of how to portray a future. Yes, they did. Yes, they did. It's in the IMDb. They exchanged scripts.
Let's be brutally honest.
The writers did. Maybe not the Russos, but the writers did.
Yeah. The writers may have been passing stuff back and forth because at that time, Brie Larson, I had her name right. She didn't even know what her character was going to be like at the time because she never even saw a script. So, in that perspective.
But the script itself does have certain things that then the Russos directed her a certain way. The point I'm making is that she is, although filming-wise, Endgame came before Captain Marvel, it seems like a much better progression from Veers, because it's not really even Carol, it's Veers, to Carol.
Yeah.
And I think now that she knows everything about her past, she's able to open up more. She's able to be a person with a personality. And that personality shows. We'll get to that in a second. So Carol's off to kill Thanos and promises an elixir for Tony when she gets back. But the Avengers want in on that. And Nebula can tell them where Thanos is because, hello, she's his daughter. Thanos' garden, Earth was apparently ground zero, and Thanos used the stones again, like, 2 days before this to do something. So they're going to go get the stones and undo everything. That's the plan. There's a really great scene where Thor and Carol meet kind of face-to-face, and he, like, calls Stormbreaker, and she just, like, doesn't flinch, and then she has a smirk on her face, like, yeah, you take that, Stormbreaker. I'm like, okay, I like you now. Thanos used the stones again. Rhodey's like, where were you? Oh, so there's this whole thing about how Carol comes off very, you know, hoity-toity. And so she's like, oh, you guys have never been to space. Like, I'm going to go. And Rhodey's like, well, where were you? And she's like, you know, Earth is not the only place that's been devastated by this whole thing. So, like, really? Like,
well, I think it also kind of came down to, I think the line was more like, Earth's not the only place that needs saving.
Yeah.
Because Rhodey's thing is like, where have you been all this time?
Yeah.
And she's been out saving other places.
Exactly. So they go after Thanos in Peter's ship. Carol can now breathe in space when she's all fired up. So that's an upgrade. They go, and then when they arrive, there's a fun moment where it's like, okay, who here has never been to space? And like everybody except
Banner.
Hulk, Banner, like raises their hands. It's like, okay, hold on tight. And then they do
don't throw up in my ship.
Right. So they go, Carol does some recon, and Carol's like, oh, he's all alone. Steve looks at his stupid Peggy compass, and Nat says that this will work, because there's no alternative, like, this has to work. So Carol comes back and tells him that Thanos is, like, all by himself. Yeah, and we see that Thanos is actually injured. Half his face is, like, burned, and Thor goes straight for the arm and just cuts it off. But there's no stones.
Yeah, but also one thing that you also notice about Thanos is that at the end of Infinity War, when you see him, you see the damage on the arm that wore the gauntlet.
You see a little bit of it, but he has more extensive because it's the second time he's used the stones, and the damage is more extreme.
Yep. And it's something to note now because it's something to talk about later.
That's fair.
Yeah. That's the reason why I bring it up, because like the damage the second time around brings up a good point when we see it later. Yes.
So Thanos' arm gets cut off, but there's no stones. Thanos has apparently, he used the stones to destroy the stones, which like, okay, fine. Which this also like nearly killed. So basically, Thanos has regrets about Nebula, like, oh, my daughter, how I treated you, and then Thor cuts off his head. It's kind of funny, like, oh, I really should have treated you better, and then his head's just rolling away.
And the greatest line is like, what did you do? I aimed for the head.
Yep. If only he'd done that in Infinity War. Anyway, Thor says that he went for the head. Thor exits the hut, and then we have a black screen, and then it says 5 years later. There's like all of these boats parked at the Statue of Liberty. We see what is, I guess, the Met Stadium or something. And there's all these abandoned cars.
Yeah, I think it was Citi Field, maybe.
Yeah, and it looks really, really kind of desolate, like abandoned city kind of a thing. And Steve is at a survivor support group. Oh my lord, this support group gets one bonus point, and it's not for the reason that you think. This group gets bonus points for having a Jim Starlin cameo, which is, I hope, a tradition Marvel will carry on in future films, where the person that created the particular storyline that the film is based on actually does the cameo, since, you know, Stanley's dead. So that would be cool. So Jim Starlin gets a point. What this movie doesn't get points for is the Russo cameo. Because it was stupid. In the sense that, like, people made it out to be a bigger deal than it was. This is a civilian. One of the Russos plays a civilian. He's the same guy who played the dead guy in Civil War and then the doctor for Fury in Winter Soldier. So I think it's Joe Russo, right?
Maybe. Anyway, I'll look it up.
One of the two Russos. And he laments about how he's going on a date with a man, and this is the first time, and blah, 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 and they're crying, and like, okay, good job. You had a gay character for like 2.5 seconds. It's not going to win you a GLAAD award. Like, it's not, like, it's good that it was in there, don't get me wrong, I guess, but it felt very, like,
Let's put it in perspective like this. When it comes to Marvel, which has had zero representation of it, you had to at least start somewhere.
Yeah. And
as minor as it is, at least it's going to build to something.
Fine. I hope it builds to an X-Men franchise with Alpha Flight. I hope it builds to, you know, we know that Valkyrie will be, you know, portrayed accurately in her bisexuality, hopefully in Thor, Love and Thunder. So fine. But you could have kept like a scene in Wakanda with Ayo or somebody else, you know, like, anyway. So Steve laments about Peggy. The world is now informed that Thanos was the one responsible because Steve talks about it freely. And they talk about moving on. Meanwhile, in San Francisco, in a storage unit, a very pesky rat hits the right combination of buttons that brings a very, very fine-looking man back to this world. And his name is Scott Lang. So, Scott's alive, as we know, at the end of Infinity War, Ant-Man and Wasp, he was trapped in the quantum realm, and he's now in the storage unit. So the Ken Jeong community cameo number one is him as the security guard. So Scott gets freed, he takes some of his stuff, and he's kind of in shock because everything's kind of overgrown, and he tries to ask a kid what's happened here, and nobody will tell him, and then he sees the memorial to the vanished. And of course, Scott, like any dad, his first reaction is, oh my God, my daughter. So he starts looking for Cassie's name. But he doesn't find her name. He finds his. So the first place he goes to after this is, of course, his daughter's house. And he finds Cassie, who is, you know, not 8 years old anymore. And it's just like this shot, her reaction is like peak acting. This is her only job in this entire film, except like one scene at the end. But the emotion on her face was so well portrayed. Like, it was very well done.
Real quick, it was, in fact, Joe Russo, and he goes by the name of Gozi Agbo when he does these appearances in the Marvel films.
Woohoo.
I told you I'd look it up.
Thank you. So I guess maybe Cassie kind of fills him in on what happened a little bit, because the next logical place he goes to with the van, so, is the compound. But take note here, he drove from San Francisco in the van all the way to the compound, and he didn't make a lot of stops.
Well, I mean, that guy seemed like he was pretty, I mean, I think he had enough rest for 5 years, especially the fact that...
Well, except he wasn't really resting. He was trapped in the quantum realm. It's not like he woke up from a 5-year nap.
Well, let's be honest.
Oh, except for him, it wasn't a nap, though. That's the thing. For him, it was a matter of minutes, not years. They say that because time passes differently in the quantum realm.
Yep.
So anyway,
you see the segue I was coming with there?
So Nat, meanwhile, is at the compound. She's got red hair coming back through because in Infinity War, we saw white hair. And she gets updates from others. So Rocket is doing something on a garbage ship. He's not really happy about it. There's an earthquake under the ocean, and Nat's like, what are we doing about it? And Okoye just looks at her like, it's an earthquake under the ocean. Like, what do you want, a scavenger team? The ocean is important, though, because Namor is from Atlantis. There are two Atlantises between Marvel and DC, so keep that in mind. The king of Atlantis in the Marvel universe is a jerk. An attractive jerk, but still a jerk.
And obviously that was a seed planted for future.
Potentially, yes.
Potentially.
Rhodey says that a bunch of drug cartel guys were found dead in Mexico. And although they don't say it, it's kind of hinted at that it's Clint. Steve apparently lives somewhere else, but comes in to do his laundry. And apparently he saw whales in the Hudson, which is kind of neat. Steve says that he tells everybody to move on, but he can't. And Nat says that this is it for her. Job, family, this is all she has. And she said that, you know, this is what made her better. And they both, but the thing that Steve says is they both need to get a life. We'll get to Steve's lack of life in a second, because I have some gripes with that. Anyway. There's an alert that comes from someone at the door, and it's Scott. And they're like, oh, is this like archive footage? And they're like, no, this is literally outside. So Scott can't really explain quantum physics to them, but the quantum realm and basically the concept of time travel. So they go to Tony, who has a kid now because that was necessary. And he sees his daughter has a helmet, and it's actually the rescue helmet, and it's a gift for mom, aka Pepper. So Tony says that Scott's arrival is a fluke. Like, it's not really a fluke, because, like, Janet survived for years in the quantum realm, like, literal decades, so, like, not a fluke. And that the stones are in the past, so Scott's like, oh, well, there's rules of time travel. No speaking to your past selves, yet Back to the Future reference. And Tony's like, no, that's not how it works. This is a dumb plan anyway. And Tony won't entertain the thought. Robert Downey Jr. is really good with the little girl that plays Morgan. Like, he's just, like, I don't think it's even acting. And he's just really good with her. And it's really cute how, like, she comes in when he's getting testy and she's like, mom told me to come and rescue you. And he's like, I'm saved. And, like, it's just, it's so sweet, but still a pointless subplot in my opinion. So they're going to need a really big brain. So they go to the biggest, and, you know, Scott's like, what's bigger brain than Stark's, than his? And that is Professor Hulk. So Banner, because of some, I guess, issues between Banner and Hulk, he made some shenanigans in a lab because he really should have learned from the last time, and he becomes Professor Hulk. Hulk's body with Banner's brain and personality, basically.
Yep.
So in a scene that could have been cut is him taking selfies with the kids. Like, that could have been cut.
Although I mean, here's the thing about that, it's funny when they do the Scott Lang bit, but
it kind of cringy on rewatch.
Now, it gets cringy the more you watch it, and the reason I think it gets cringy the more you watch it is because, like, when you watch it the first time, the timing maybe went on a little bit too long, and that's what probably makes it go cringy. Like, if they do the joke and it's just, nah, it's okay, and then they go away, that's fine. Now, real quick, who are those three kids?
Fans. I know one was,
all three of them are the Russo's kid.
Not all of them. One played Lila.
Yeah, that's true. One, the daughter played Lila, but I think those were
Two boys and a girl. So I think there's two daughters or something. One played Lila, one played one of the kids. Yep. Anyway, look, I get it, but it's just like, the movie was long and I'm fine with certain parts of it being long, but there are parts where I see where they could have made cuts.
Yeah, that, like, they could have made that, like, cut just a little bit.
Yeah, so Tony's does the, basically Banner tells them that it can be done, and Tony, meanwhile, is doing the dishes that night, and there's a pic of him with Peter Parker. And then he starts kind of tinkering, and he basically figures it out. And there's a cute moment with this whole, like, come on, let's get a popsicle with his daughter who should be asleep. So as Tony figures out time travel, he sees, and he says, like, holy shit, there's his little girl, who says, shit. He's like, you shouldn't use that word. That's mom, whatever.
Mom's word.
That's mom's word, right. And there's a cute moment where, like, she gets a popsicle because he's like, what are you doing here? And he's like, juice pop. Like, it's cute. She's a cute kid. But that does not make this subplot any more annoying. Like, I get it. Tony Stark, blah, blah, blah. He's maturing, moving on, yada, yada, yada. But, like, I think this actually hurts the overall plot of the film. And I will get to this when we get to the analysis at the end. Remind me, Mike.
Forget about it. Gotcha.
But anyway, we get the whole I love you 3000 thing. Pepper tells him to go. And Scott and Banner do a time travels test, except instead of sending, as Tony later points out, instead of sending Scott through time, they sent time through Scott. Oopsies!
We get old man Scott, teenage Scott, baby Scott.
Baby Scott.
Child Scott.
And the funny thing is when Scott comes back, he's like, was it old me or baby me that shit in the suit? Like...
I may have messed myself, but I don't know if it was baby me or old me.
So Tony arrives, and I gotta say, after all of these films, his arrogance just starts grating just a little bit on you. Let's see. Time and space, GPS, wants peace. Tony has conditions. Keep what we found and not die trying. I'm sure that'll work out, but otherwise he's on board. And he gives Steve a present, which is his old shield that he abandoned in Civil War. And it's a nice and touching scene. And Tony's just like, just don't tell anybody where you got it. I didn't bring anything for the others.
And then he goes like, but we do have a team though, right?
Yeah. That, you know, the team is incomplete. They need everybody. So Scott is eating a taco as Nebula and Rocket arrives. And
he's trying to eat a taco.
Excuse me. No, it's, yeah, Nebula and Rocket arrive and then Rhodey. And Rhodey and Nebula are pals and I love it. As she's like walking by, she's like, Rhodey, be careful on entry. There's a moron in the front. Like, it's so funny. Her dry humor is so good and so on point. I love it.
That's a credit to Karen Gillian.
She's a great actress. I hated her in Doctor Who, but I love her. I didn't like her character in Doctor Who, but we'll get to, I really wish the movie managed to put in at least one Doctor Who reference though, because they mention like so many other time travel shenanigans, including Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, which has a phone booth. Anyway, so
there's Rocket, only so many phone booths you can allow in this movie to be referenced.
Right. So they need to go get everybody. Meaning everybody. So who's missing right now? We've got Rhodey, Nebula, Rocket, Scott, Tony, Banner, Steve, Natasha. We need two more people to complete it. We need Thor and we need Barton. So Hulk and Rocket go to Tonsberg, which is the home of New Asgard. And this was referenced in, so Thorsberg apparently has actually appeared in every Thor film, including Dark World and the first Thor movie, which is
And Captain America. No, Captain America. Yes, Captain America too,
yeah.
Because it was the very beginning of the movie.
Yes.
Yep.
So we see Valkyrie. She's doing okay. She, when they say that they came for Thor, she's like, oh, we see him once a month when he comes in full supplies. And supplies are, of course, beer. So I guess what happened was, though this is not officially said, is that a bunch of people managed to escape, and they got as many people out as they could before Thanos managed to decimate everybody else. Or Heimdall was just teleporting everybody until he got blasted by whatever. So basically, a whole bunch of Asgardians managed to escape.
So the story is, from what I understand, is if you remember, they had the Grandmaster's ship at the end of Ragnarok.
Right, and it was so they piled as many people as they could in there.
And it was actually attached to the bigger ship that they flew away with the Asgardians. So according to like lore or canon, Valkyrie took a group of them onto that ship and they flew to Earth.
Makes sense.
So that's the only thing that can make sense to me on that.
So let us talk about the Mighty Thor and how far the Mighty Thor hath fallen. But actually, I know people have said that this was played out as a joke a little bit. And on the second watch through, I don't really see it. Yes, it's played off to the audience in a humorous way, but nobody treats what Thor is going to, in my opinion, as a joke. But we'll get to that. So Thor is a drunk and he's depressed. And Meek and Korg are, of course, utterly useless. They're just there.
Well,
they're useless. They're just there to help entertain Thor. And they are. I'm sorry. They serve no other plot. They play video games with Thor and they watch him drink.
I want to play video games with Thor. Come on now.
Yeah, I want to play video games with Thor too, but I'm not going to sit there watching him get drunk day after day. I'm sorry. I'm not. Korg apparently is being bullied by some 12-year-old on the headset. Like, wow. It's a little dumb. I'm sorry. It's dumb.
But now there's like, we have to get later into the film, but there's a funny little theory of who that could be.
The kid on the other end? Well, we're at the scene. You might as
well
tell
us. No. We'll talk about when we get to another scene.
Okay.
Yep.
So Rocket is not impressed, and Banner's like, oh my god. And so they tell Thor that they're going to fix everything. Well, not everything. So they say they're going to fix everything, but that's not what they're doing, though. Because Thor, what happens in this doesn't solve Thor's problems, or the source of his issues, in my opinion. Thor is obviously not okay. Rocket says, he's like, oh, I'm not going to go with you. And Rocket's like, there's beer on the ship. All right, so they get Thor.
They get the Big Lebowski on the ship.
They make that joke later. So in Tokyo, on the Quinjet, we see Ronin. Not to be confused with Ronan with an A. This is Ronin with an I.
Even though he's actually never referred to.
He's never referred to, but the costume is very Ronin-esque because comic books.
Yep.
Anyway. A dude in a mask is fighting with a Yakuza lord dude.
Who is played by Hiroyuki Sanada. Really good actor.
Like, yes, fantastic actor.
Like he's been in, hold on, what was it? I actually have his IMDb up. He's been in The Last Samurai, Speed Racer, Rush Hour 3, Lost. He was in The Wolverine, 47 Ronin. He actually did Minions. He did one of the voices in that. That was pretty cool. He's also done TV shows. He was also in The Catcher Was a Spy, which is a Paul Rudd film. And he was also in Westworld.
I saw The Catcher Was a Spy.
Yeah, he was in that. Yeah, and then he also did the TV show Westworld.
Cool.
So, really good actor. Yes. Really good actor.
Very good actor. Anyway, so Jeremy Renner's Japanese accent needs some work, but... Anyway, but point is, there's a pretty cool sword fight, and Barton kills the Aqua Zalord.
It's funny. The dialogue between the two is hilarious because it's like, you know, Barton's pissed about like all the good people that got taken away from him, and yet you have the Yakuza here. And
don't forget the drug cartels in Mexico.
Yeah, but the conversations with the Yakuza guy. And the Yakuza guy's like, and what are you doing? And you see all these dead bodies all over the place. The Yakuza leader, played by Sonata, is like literally like, you're such a hypocrite, dude. You know?
So basically, Nat is there watching the whole thing unfold and doesn't interfere. And she convinces him to come help them because there's a chance. So they're building a thing, and I don't know what this is in reference to, but basically Thor arrives and they make that reference to the Big Lebowski. Tony makes reference to the Big Lebowski. And then as Rocket is helping them build the machine, Tony calls him Ratchet. Now, is that an unofficial Ratchet and Clank reference?
That would be kind of cool if it was.
Because that was the first thing that jumped into my mind when I heard that line. Anyway, so they get cool time travel suits that have the Ant-Man helmet style.
With the exception of one.
Yes. With the exception of Rhodey. And they use the Pym particles. They need the Pym particles to be able to shrink down. And then, so what, they need two Pym particles. One to shrink down and travel, and then one to get shrink back down and come back. But they have limited supply. I wonder if that's going to be important later. So Scott is nervous, so Clint volunteers to be the test dummy. Rhodey asks about baby Thanos, and you know, like, what if we go back in time and just, you know, kill baby Thanos? And there's the whole thing about how changing the past doesn't actually change the future, because if you travel to the past, that past becomes your future, and your future and the future becomes your past, and whatever. I guess time travel is real personal that way. They make references to literally everything except Doctor Who. Back to the Future, Quantum Leap, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Die Hard.
That's not one. But yes, they make references. That was the line, yeah.
Then Banner explains how it goes, and like Scott's like, so Back to the Future is bullshit?
It's like... Yeah. So the Clint goes in and he arrives in back at his house, and he sees his daughter.
No, he hears her.
He hears her, and then he comes back, and it hurts.
But he was able to grab something. What did he grab?
Was it like a baseball or something?
Baseball glove.
Right. Nat makes sure he's okay. Now they have to figure out the when and the where each stone is. So they start with the ether, and Thor tries to fill everyone in on the events of Thor Dark World. It's sad and it's hilarious because the other Avengers are like, oh man, he's not okay. But for the audience, yeah, it's kind of funny watching him stumble, but it's also really sad. So I don't I did not watch this movie and think Thor was a joke.
Yeah, no, it had its funny moments, like when he would like talk about like, oh, well, you know, you called it a stone. It's not a stone, it's an ether, you know, and stuff like that. So it's kind of funny, like when he goes in correcting them on that type of stuff. But then, like, when you actually, and this is how I viewed it the first time I saw it, was like, man, that guy's, you know, when he starts talking about Jane and he starts crying and, you know, like, you can tell it's like, man, that's not funny. That's messed up. He's messed up.
So I don't understand, I know some people have claimed that he was played off as a joke, but I don't think it was. Like you said, it had some humorous moments. But at the end of the day, you realize just how emotionally not okay Thor is. Anyway, so Rocket tells them about Morag and the Power Stone, and he treats Scott like a puppy. That was kind of funny. Nebula tells them about Vormir and the Soul Stone, that it's a place of death.
That was... these... great. It's the like
center of celestial existence.
Yeah, the Nebula is explaining this to them, and the look on their faces, and Scott just goes, "Not it."
Yeah. So Nat asks about the Time Stone, Doctor Strange, who is described as ear, nose, and throat meets rabbit from a hat. That was kind of funny. Nat realizes that if you pick the right year, there are three stones in New York. The Tesseract, the Mind Stone, and the Time Stone. Because the Sanctum Sanctorum is in New York. So six stones, three teams, one shot. Time Heist is on. They have enough for one round trip each. So Clint, Nebula, Rhodey, we'll get to that, but Clint has a little mini pocket ship. They shrunk down Peter's ship, which is really cute.
Well, at this point, it's not Peter's ship. It's kind of rocket ship.
Okay, fine, rocket ship. And Nat says,
see you in a minute. I made you say rocket ship, yay.
You're five. Anyway, see you, Nat says, see you in a minute. We go to New York City in 2012, in the middle of the Chitauri invasion. How are you feeling? It should be noted that there is a really funny deleted scene that I wish had been kept, and it's Rocket watching the footage of the Chitauri invasion and going, well, why didn't you just take out the mothership? And the Avengers all look at him. Because he asks, like, how long did this fight take? And Steve's like, 2-3 hours. He's like, well, why didn't you just destroy the mothership? And they're like, we did not know that was a thing. But anyway, the Chitauri invasion in 2012.
But it's funny, though, because when they actually talk about the New York invasion, apparently this also is a deleted scene. He actually, like, calls them the weakest army in the universe.
That's in that same scene.
Yeah. Like, Rocket calls the Chitauri the weakest army in, like, the universe.
It was a good army for their first foray as, you know, Avengers. And we do see them all, like, rounding the little loop. But the funniest thing is, like, you know, you've got an Iron Man suit. You've got a dude with a magic hammer. You have Steve Rogers. You have Hawkeye with arrows. And then you have Natasha with a tiny pistol. Like, give this girl an M16 or something. But here's they need to blend in, so they take on the same format as their people. And the Hulk has to pretend, Banner has to pretend to be the Hulk. And so he rips off a shirt and he's just like, you know, you gotta smash some things. And it's funny watching the original Hulk and Banner just, and Professor Hulk just going, oh God, no, that's not me, oh God. But anyway, Hulk tries to smash, or Banner tries to smash, it's kind of funny. But he's going after the Time Stone. And we actually see what the Sorceress Supreme was doing during the Chitauri invasion. She was protecting the Sanctorum. And, or the Sanctum or whatever. So Bruce Hulk arrives. I'm just going to keep calling him Banner. I'm not calling him Hulk.
Just call him Banner. At this point, he is really, even though he's
more
in
Banner
Hulk,
than Hulk. Yeah.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Says, well, oh, I'm looking for Doctor Strange, and this is, and she's, and Tilda Swinton, of course, reprises her very, very poorly conceived role as the Ancient One, and she tells, she says that, oh, you're looking for Doctor Strange. Well, actually, he's performing surgery, and I won't see him for about 5 years.
Yeah, you're 5 years too early. Was the exact
too early? Yeah. And she actually pushes Banner out of the Hulk, so that's kind of cool, like this astral projection thing. Meanwhile, on Asgard in 2013, we are in the middle of Thor Dark World, because we see Loki tossing like a thing in a cell. I think it's like a cup or something. And we see Thor and Rocket. And Rocket, good for him, Rocket actually tells Thor to pull himself together. And he sees his mom. So the idea was that Rocket was going to be lookout and Thor was going to go in with this cool tool and like suck the ether out of Jane. But Thor can't really do it. So he's having like a panic attack. Rocket sets him straight. And then we see how vulnerable Thor is. Morag 2014. Nebula and Rhodey and Clint and Natasha arrive. Nat and Rhodey go to get the Power Stone, and Clint and Nat go to Vormir. What could possibly go wrong? So as they're on the ship, Rocket, I think, told them something like, bring my ship back in one piece. And Nebula's like, you know, the coordinates are set, you're good. And so, let's see, where did I get? So they make a crack about, like, we're a long way from Budapest. Rhodey and Nebula have to wait until Quill shows up. And then Thanos, meanwhile, Thanos and the others are also, like, in this time frame. So 2014 Nebula and Gamora are fighting. And this is before the whole thing where Nebula and Gamora go to Ronin. So Gamora and Nebula are working for Thanos. They go see him at the end, and then they will be sent to Ronin. Nebula ends up malfunctioning because she's connected to her future self because they're on the same network. And they see Rhodey and future Nebula. Uh-oh. Meanwhile,
SpaghettiOs.
Meanwhile, back in New York, Tony sneaks into the I'll have that drink now scene in Avengers, which is at the end, after Loki has been thoroughly thrashed by the Hulk. And I'm actually making the same gesture, even though no one can see me, but it's so good.
Now, real quick, Jarvis is in this scene. Who is Jarvis voiced by?
Paul Bettany?
No. James Darcy.
Well, because we see the actual Jarvis later on.
Oh, yeah, yeah, my bad.
There yet.
Oh, wait, yeah.
The actual Jarvis, not voice Jarvis.
Yeah, we see the actual Jarvis.
Yeah, because he's the actual Jarvis, Edwin Jarvis. There's no actual Jarvis in this scene, not the AI anyway. So shush hold that for later.
No, damn it.
Fight me.
You're in Maine, I'm in Maryland. That's a little hard of a fight.
Anyway, right, so Steve's suit apparently did nothing for his ass, as Tony says, but Scott says it's America's ass. God, I love this scene so much. Anyway, so Scott...
And it created the greatest 4th of July meme of all time.
Also, it should be noted, Scott actually salutes America's ass.
This is true.
I'm convinced that every character in the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe who is an adult has at least a little bit of a, who has met him, has a crush on Captain America. Anyway, so Steve, the strike team arrives, and Sitwell and Rumlow take the staff. Scott says they look like bad guys, and, you know, Tony says they're Hydra. And Loki makes fun of Cap, which is how he ends up with a muzzle on his face in the later scene in the actual event in the original Avengers movie. I love Chris Evans playing Loki pretending to be Captain America. It's beautiful. I love it every time. It's one of my favorite tropes because when it's done well, it comes off so good. Anyway, the rest of them take the Tesseract and they're going to get into the elevator. Hulk don't like stairs, but Hulk has to take stairs because elevator has weight limit.
Womp womp.
It's a lot of stairs.
Well, I think they're also just at capacity in general of how many people are in there too.
Yeah. So Sitwell says that he says they're en route to Dr. List, Mr. Secretary. So Steve enters the elevator in a scene that reminds us all very much of that other scene from Winter Soldier. And he says that he's going to take point on the scepter because he's just talked to the secretary. And so it was like, I literally just got off the phone with the secretary. And he's like, no, that's right. And then he comes closer to Sitwell and whispers, Hail Hydra. And first of all, I know that people said this is in reference to Secret Empire, which is the stupid story of Steve being Hydra, which was really stupid. Did I mention it was stupid? It was really stupid. But it also just shows you how amazing that Steve has actually learned a lot, especially from Natasha and being friends with her. So he's got some spy skills now.
Yep. And the smirk, and like you see the smirk on the face of Sitwell. And
No, it wasn't a smirk. It was like, oh, Cap's with us now. And Steve's the one that actually smirks afterwards.
Oh, yeah, the scepter. Yeah, he did the smirk. But yeah, it was just the good one because it's like, that Winter Soldier elevator scene was so good.
Anyway, so when it first came out, I watched it probably like 10 times. But anyway, so meanwhile, downstairs, Tony and Scott need to get the Tesseract. So Mr. Secretary Pierce, played by Robert Redford, in the only time in his entire career when he's actually reprised a role, he plays the Secretary of Hydra again. He wants Loki, and Thor's like, oh, no, I'm taking Loki back to Asgard. And basically, Scott plays with his tinker, with Tony's, because he still has the hollow, like, he actually has the thing.
Yeah, he still has the arc reactor in his chest.
And the 2012 Tony collapses. Tony gets the case, and as he's walking away with the Tesseract, he gets smacked by the door and Hulk coming out. Meanwhile, the case opens, Loki grabs the Tesseract, and disappears.
And according to fan theory, becomes Noob Master, the little kid who is torturing Korg in video games.
That's a really dumb theory, I'm sorry.
But it's a funny theory. There is a legitimate fan theory out there that says that...
Oh, no, I'm sure... But how does he become a kid, then? Stop. I know. Loki has been everything and everyone.
So,
ugh, fuck Loki.
But that's the funny thing, because like, could you truly imagine that it's Loki just messing with Thor and his buddies that way?
Yes, but also, I guess we'll find out when Loki show comes out on Disney Plus, whenever that happens.
I highly doubt he'll be Noob Master, but that would be hilarious. That would be a funny little Easter egg.
Let's see, Tony with the hammer. Oh, Thor actually saves 2012 Tony with the hammer and gives him a little jump start. Scott and Tony blew it. Obviously, they didn't get the Tesseract. Meanwhile, Steve runs into his 2012 set, the 2012 version, and he just has like this defeated look on his face, and he goes, "You've got to be shitting me." And of course, 2012 Cap thinks that's Loki because he's got the staff. This is really interesting because I think you see a contrast here between Whedon's version of Steve and the Russo version of Steve. Whereas the Whedon version of Steve is the good old boy, you know, who takes orders and is a soldier. And you see the more jaded spy version of Steve that has kind of grown up in this world now over the course of, you know, 8 years or whatever since 2012.
Yeah, and especially the fact that, like, when you look at Cap in Avengers, he had just been thawed out from the ice at that point.
Yeah, literally, like,
so,
2 seconds before.
So he's, like, still in that mindset of World War II in a way.
Yeah. And so the fight is really awesome. They throw shields at each other and it doesn't do anything. They're falling. And then, of course, Steve's compass flies off and he's like, how do you have this? I'm like, oh God, can we leave Peggy out of this? But what finally does it is like Whedon Cap has our Steve kind of like wrapped in a chokehold, and Steve tells Cap, Bucky's alive. And of course, you know, Steve knows that Bucky's his own weak spot, so that does it. He's like, what? And Steve knocks him out. And of course, he looks at his own ass and says, you know, that is America's ass. Steve would know, it's his ass.
It's not anyway, like he looks at his own ass, though.
It is his own ass, technically. It's the 2012 version of his own ass. it's a slightly younger version of his ass. Meanwhile, the Ancient One and Banner are talk about how time is vulnerable without the stones, blah 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 blah. Like time will falter, and Banner's like, well, if we bring the stones back and put them back here, Nations One is like, okay, good plan, but what if you don't succeed? They need to survive. And Bender says that Strange gave the stone to Thanos willingly. And that seems to convince the Ancient One to give the stone, because Strange is meant to be the best of us. He must have had a reason. You know, I feel like she should have treated him just a little bit better. But anyway, if she knew all of this in 2012. And like, yes, Strange needed a dose of humble pie, but I don't think he needed that big of a dose. Anyway, so back on Morag, or on the spaceship, Thanos' Squidward son is hurting Nebula, and they discover there's another Nebula. Timestamp from the future. They see Nebula's memories, and Thanos finds out what happened. On Asgard, Thor has a really great scene with, I think it was, what was it, Rene Russo, right? Who played Thor's mom.
Yep.
In the literal most screen time she has ever had in a film, with the most lines, she has this really tender moment with Thor. Moms are the best. So meanwhile, Rocket, you know, hits Jane to get the ether. Frigga gives some good advice, Thor tries to warn her, but Mom says no, and Rocket gets the ether, and he's like, okay, we gotta go. Thor decides to test a theory, and he reaches out his hand, and the hammer comes to him. He's like, yes, I'm still worthy.
But
and it's a really important moment.
But the joke before that, though, was that he's holding the hand out, and Rocket's going like,
and nothing's happening.
What are you doing? And then Frigga's like,
sometimes it takes a minute, yeah.
But it was a good build-up to that moment, though.
It does. It's a really genuine conversation about how, you know, Thor is human and he's going to make mistakes, and that it's okay. You cannot save everybody, and that, like, it's a moment that he could only have had with his mother, because if it came from anybody else, I don't think he would have listened.
Yeah, and not only that, but it, and we'll talk more about it later, but it's really important for the overall arc of Thor. You know, because when you look at it from the very beginning, he had to eat that humble pie to regain the powers of Mjolnir. And then...
You're assuming he lost them in the first place.
Yeah. Well, he couldn't lift the hammer for a while.
But that wasn't an issue by the time we get to the Thor we see now.
But
the only time he couldn't lift the hammer was when he was an arrogant jerk.
Yeah, I know, but that's what I'm saying. That's what happened in the first film. He had to eat that humble pie because he couldn't lift Mjolnir because of what his father did. But then in the second movie, he loses his mother. The third movie, he loses his father, and he's trying to refine himself.
And his hammer.
Yeah, and his hammer. And then now you go into... Infinity War, he loses the Thanos, and then he goes into Endgame now, and now it's like he's trying to rediscover himself, and that conversation with his mom is like the starting point of him re-finding himself.
Yes.
And turning it around. So like when you look at that overall character arc through all of his movies, you know, it's been probably one of the best built, even though one was a dud, But when you look at, and that's why I always say that with what they did in Endgame, it actually made Dark World mean something in the end.
Yeah, that's
fair. It didn't mean anything then, but it means
something now. Yeah. So meanwhile on Morag, Peter Quill has finally decided to show up, and we see the reenactment of the scene from
the opening from
Guardians of the Galaxy. Yep. And Rhodey just has this look like he's just not amused. Like, this guy's a moron.
It's like, this guy's an idiot.
And yep. He just knocks him out.
It's funny seeing Peter... So first we actually see it like the way it was actually in Guardians.
Yeah, and then we see it from the other perspective.
And then they cut the music away from it, and you hear Peter go like, "Yeah, man," and like he's such an idiot, and it's so great. Chris Pratt does that so good.
Yes. So Rhodey and Nebula are about to enter like the little sanctum or whatever, and he's like, "Wait, there's booby traps," and Nebula's just like, "What the heck are you talking about?" And just like goes straight for the power stone.
And that was actually an Indiana Jones reference. and many, yes, and pretty obviously. Much any, and pretty much any other possible like adventure, Tomb Raiding type,
yes,
film. Reference.
One of the other things is that they also, so Nebula puts her robotic arm in and then takes the Power Stone out, and they kind of have this bonding moment of like they're both not who they used to be. Like Rhodey, technically speaking, can't walk anymore. Or at least not without the device that Tony built for him. And Nebula's entire body is basically robotic at this point because Thanos is an evil jerk. Rhodey goes back, but Nebula gets like glitched and doesn't. Thanos sees his future and death. And past Nebula says that she wouldn't betray Thanos, and something about proving her loyalty, they take future Nebula. Future Nebula tries to warn Nat off of Quill's ship, but she can't. Tony and Scott kind of argue about like what's the other option because they lost the Tesseract. Tony has a stroll down memory lane, talks about a military installation. Scott goes back to the compound with the other stone.
With the mind stone. Staff, yeah.
With the staff. And Steve and Tony go to the year 1970. Captain Steve, I love Scott's interactions with Steve, because he hears him, Captain, Steve, America, Rogers. But anyway, they go to this 1970s, and we have our very happy Stanley cameo of him driving off around. And they did a pretty good job of making Stan look like he actually did in 1970. So I'll give him that.
Well, they also, I was looking at the IMDb credits. They actually had a stunt double or a stand-in double to make him look a little younger too. Because obviously with his health being the way it was. So when you see the driving, that's the double. But then when they do the lines, that's really Stan Lee.
So Tony, it's a S.H.I.E.L.D. There's a joke about a quasi-fascist facility before they go to the Triskelion. So this is the precursor to the Triskelion that we'll see in Winter Soldier. This is just S.H.I.E.L.D. as a base in the 70s. Tony is going to go after the Tesseract, and Steve is going to do something else. So I think they're in the elevator, and we actually see the second Community cameo. It's that, what's the actress's name? I can never remember from Community.
I never saw the show Community, so I wouldn't know.
I started watching it. I'm so far not amused. But it is the lovely and incredibly talented, it won't load for me. I cannot find her name. But anyway.
I'll find it.
Basically, she's like in the elevator and she kind of eyes him because Steve and Tony don't exactly fit into this time frame, like really don't fit in. I think they actually describe Tony's facial hair as like a...
Oh, it was Yvette Nicole stick. Brown.
Yes, Yvette Nicole Brown. I love her. So Tony gets the Tesseract and Howard comes in looking for Zola. Ha-ha. Tony introduces himself as Howard Potts. And Tony has a very tender moment with his dad without his dad realizing he's talking to his son. So Steve goes to get more Pym particles. And it should be noted, as we see Pym's lab, we actually see a version of the original helmet from the 60s. So kudos to that.
Yeah. They placed that really well.
Hank and says, Miss Dr. Pym, we have this package. He's like, well, bring it up. Hank used to be a jerk. Says, well, it's kind of glowing, you know?
But we're supposed to open it, you idiots.
Yeah, so makes you wonder what it is. I'm sure there's plenty of fan theories about that, but anyway. Steve grabs the vials of the Pym particles, and Tony realizes that timing-wise, Mom's pregnant with him. Howard worries that he, you know, greater good versus self-interest, and he worries that he's not going to be a good dad. And we see that the woman from the elevator, called security, and Steve ends up hiding, and he ends up hiding in Peggy's office, and we see 1970s Peggy. And there's this very annoying scene of him awkwardly and longingly looking out into the window at Peggy. Pause for dramatic effect. Howard and Tony continue outside. Tony gives his dad some advice and realizes that his dad actually does love him. And here we see the cameo of Edwin Jarvis, who we previously have only ever seen in the Agent Carter TV show.
Yeah.
And then Howard says something like, that guy looks really familiar. So on Thanos' ship, there's a fight, the Nebula's fight. Nebula tries to reach Gamora. The old Nebula takes the Pym particle and makes herself look like future Nebula in order to obviously go back in time. Meanwhile, Clint and Nat arrive on Vormir. There's no really need to beat around the bush. Basically, Red Skull tells them that a soul for a soul. They fight over who gets it. Nat falls. She dies. Clint gets the soul stone.
Yeah, but it's heartbreaking though, because it's like you can tell, like Clint was going to sacrifice himself for his family.
Yep.
And then Nat was like, "No, I'm
going to sacrifice." No, you have a family, so I'm going to sacrifice. It's a very much, I'm going to sacrifice myself. No, I'm going to sacrifice myself. Yeah. And they're not fighting over who kills who. They're literally fighting over who dies.
Yeah.
And it's ultimately Nat.
And the one thing going in before that, like Red Skull, like he actually says, "Oh, Clint, son of," and then whatever. Mother, and then like Natasha's daughter of, and then the father. And like Clint's like not taking it seriously for a moment here, because like he just thinks it's a joke. And then like Natasha's like, "No, I never knew who my father was. He just told me who my father was," you know, which brought it to a more serious level and made Clint go, "Oh crap, this is real." So there are.
On the other hand, if she doesn't know her dad, how does she know that he didn't just make that up? But whatever. But,
well, I mean, he's supposed to be the speaker.
I know. But like from like that Earthling perspective.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Nat's dead.
Damn, just put it that way. Yeah, she's dead.
Nat's dead. What do you want from me? I'm not about to boo-hoo it over here. They have a little memorial for her, sort of, like, they're all, like, looking out in the water and talking
about her. Well, they haven't gone back yet.
Yes, okay, so everybody comes back, and Clint starts crying, and everybody's like, wait, and Bruce is like, where's Nat? And Nat's dead.
And now they can have their memorial.
Yeah. Clint says that they can't bring her back. Obviously you can, like she sacrificed for the stone. So even if you put the stone back, you're only putting it back to the time you took it from. Nat's dead.
Yeah.
They say that, like, you know, they're her family and Clint wishes it was him. Poor Clint. Like, he's also not in a good headspace because, you know, the entire family's been decimated. So they make a stock gauntlet. And Rocket makes the boom noise as they're trying to put all of the stones into the gauntlet that Tony has made. And the question is, who's wearing the glove? Thor volunteers, but they all say no because he's not the right person to do this.
He's filled with soda and cheese whiz.
Right, but I think there's a deeper meaning behind it. He's not okay. And even though I think he arguably could have been the only one to handle the power because of his own like lightning stuff, it had to be Banner.
Well, and not only that, but like you have, I mean, and the top on that, it's the sound of mind.
Yeah.
And Thor was definitely not in the sound of mind.
Nope. So Nebula does some stuff with the machine so that she can bring Daddy.
Hey, Daddy. And
so this is the part that bugs me. They've completely forgot about the Vision, even though like you see his face in the beginning of the film when they're looking at who's been snapped. They completely forgot about Vision because they say that they're only bringing those that were snapped.
Well, but the thing is, though, is that Vision was never created at the time when they took the staff, because
that's not the point.
So they were not going to be able to bring it back.
It doesn't matter, because that staff will be. Yes, they can. It's a freaking Infinity Gauntlet. They could do anything. So fight me. They could have, but here's the thing: they told Thor that they were going to bring everybody back. But that everybody is only people that were snapped. That means Heimdall, Loki, and the other Asgardians are all still dead. Vision is still dead. So, And then the other part of this is, like, when this is revealed later, but when Banner does the snap and everybody gets brought back, he says that he tried to bring Nat back. I'm like, you can't bring Nat back. Vision is a lot easier to bring back than that. I'm still bitter.
But the thing is, though, is that, like, when you look at it from the perspective of when they took the time,
it doesn't matter. Because the stones all get put back from the same spot they were taken. Their own history doesn't change. Vision was still created with the Mind Stone. You could bring him back without the Mind Stone. It's an Infinity Gauntlet. You can do literally anything. You can bring back an android.
Well, you're going to get him back another way, so.
I know, but still. I was very annoyed by this when I first saw Endgame, and I'm still annoyed by it. So the Avengers suit up to protect themselves, I guess. Everybody comes home, except, you know, not everybody. It hurts. Well, Nebula opens the door to 2014. Thanos arrives. Banner
but
snaps.
Before we hop there, let's do the snap thing first. So Banner does the snap. If you notice his arm.
Yeah, the energy travels, it burns, he takes the... let me finish.
He actually takes more damage in his arm than Thanos did on his first snap.
Yeah, because Thanos is different alien physiology and whatnot.
Like, the gamma radiation within Banner helped him be able to hold it, but the time that he had it on did more damage to him. And then we'll get to when we get to Tony, because obviously we've talked about this on my podcast, The Experience, in the past before. You know, we'll talk about that. But when he does the snap and they go, did it work? You see the shot of Scott.
Yeah, so Scott
outside,
is
and there's birds outside. And there's birds flying.
Yep.
There were no birds before the snap. Now there are birds.
So obviously Scott realizes that it worked, and Clint's phone rings. And it's Laura. It's his wifey. But he doesn't really get to say much to her, because Thanos kind of blows up the compound.
Well, not only that, but he is also kind of in shock that it worked.
Yeah, too. Obviously.
There was the shock that it worked, and then Thanos shooting at them. So.
That's true. So what ends up happening is everybody dies, and that's the end of the movie. But in actuality, of course, that doesn't happen.
Just kidding.
Everybody's fine. Yeah. The end. So Rhodey is obviously grounded because he kind of had to get out of the suit. He manages to push a beam off of Rocket. The water's ascending, and Banner's holding them up with like one arm because the other one's kind of broke. Scott is reading Rhodey's distress call and is going after them. Clint's fine, by the way. He calls Cap, and he finds the glove and the stones. But he also shoots a light arrow into the distance because he hears something, and he sees, you know, creepy creatures. In the distance, there's a light. Thanos lands on Earth, officially, and speaks with Nebula. He's just going to chill there until Nebula basically brings him the stones. Like, why do I have to do the dirty work? Gamora finds future Nebula and asks what happens. And Nebula tells her that they become friends first and eventually become sisters. And Gamora agrees to help her stop Thanos. Tony finds Steve. They're fine. Tony Thor and meanwhile, past Gamora is on the ship, or future Gamora is on the ship with past future Nebula is on the ship with past Gamora. Jeez Louise, this is confusing. And Gamora asks her, like, what happens to us? And Nebula says that we're friends and then we become sisters, which is what Gamora ultimately have always wanted. Gamora agrees to help. Tony finds Steve. They're both fine. Tony, Thor, and Steve see Thanos kind of like in the overclear. And they know that the stones are buried under the rubble and think that Thanos could be a trap. Thor brings the lightning. He's got Stormbreaker and Mjolnir. And Thanos realizes the mistake in his plan. That the snap was successful, but the problem was that people remembered. So when he rebuilds the new world, it's going to be a grateful universe because they won't know it's any different. And that, you know, it's going to be born from blood, but they won't know it. So the water's rising. Meanwhile, Hulk, Rhodey, and Rocket are about to die, but it's Scott to the rescue in the distance. Clint is fighting off hounds with arrows. Nebula gets, past Nebula gets the gauntlet. And Clint realizes that she's on Thanos' side because she calls her dad. And, like, did you think Clint wouldn't notice you calling Thanos or saying, like, father, I have the gauntlet? Like, come on. But Gamora arrives with future Nebula, and Clint rightfully and most intelligently gets out of the way. And while Gamora tries to reason with the time equivalent of her sister, Nebula just kills her.
He's like, nope, game over. Yeah, I mean, trying to play this game.
It's not like it's murder. Well, it's not. Anyway, Thor energizes Tony, and they throw the hammer at Thanos, but Thanos uses Tony as a shield. So there's, like, lightning stuff happening, and then, like, Tony gets used as a shield when Thor throws the hammer at Thanos, which was kind of funny. Then Thanos beats up Thor and the hammer falls to the wayside. He calls for Stormbreaker, but Thanos grabs it and uses it. And he's like pushing it into
the chest.
Thor into the chest when all of a sudden the hammer moves and smacks Thanos right out. But it does not go to Thor. It goes to Steve. Wielding the shield and the hammer, and Thor just looks at him and goes, I knew it!
And then gets knocked out.
Oh, God, it's such a satisfying scene of watching the hammer in Steve's hands, like, oh my God.
And then one of the great things is that as Steve is now attacking Thanos, what's the one thing that you notice throughout this entire attack that Steve does on Thanos?
He does the Thor tactic where he spins the thing and then lightning. No?
He aims for the head. Every shot that he lands on Thanos is directly to the head. It's actually why his helmet broke, because Steve kept targeting it.
So let's see. Steve's kicking ass. Great shield to hammer combos. Moment of lightning. But Thanos is stronger. Thanos actually breaks the shield. It hurt. Steve falls, stands up slowly, and Thanos says it's personal now and that he'll enjoy this moment. But the cavalry has arrived. So bear in mind right now, we don't know what's going on with the other Avengers. As far as we know, Scott is still trying to rescue Hulk, Rocket, and Rhodey. We don't know where Gamora and Nebula went off to, and Clint still has the gauntlet, and like, what is he gonna do with it? So, and Thor and Tony are currently knocked out. Then all of a sudden, this army lands of creatures and Thanos's other children. And the only person that stands against them is Steve Rogers. And his leg is cut, but he's like, I am ready to fight.
And his arm is actually cut from the battering to his shield.
That's right. But he just like tightens his arm. He's like, I got this.
In like 30 seconds, but I got this.
But all of a sudden, there's a little moment on the speakers, and it's Sam's voice is Cap, can you hear me? And then you hear the sling ring, and he says, on your left. And he does actually show up on the left side of Steve, which is a nice touch. So all of a sudden these sling rings start appearing, and who comes out from them? First, it's Wakanda. We have T'Challa, Okoye, Shuri, and then Sam flies out. Then you have Doctor Strange, Mantis, Drax, Peter, and Peter Parker. Then you have the Wakandan army. You also see M'Baku. You've got Bucky and Groot. Plus, like, an army of wizards and Asgardians with Valkyrie and Korg and Meek. And then you have Wanda.
And Wong.
I'm getting to that. I have, like,
a list. Well, he came out with the lizards.
No, he didn't. No, he didn't. The wizards are separate. And then you have Wong coming out. And then you have Hope. And then the Ravagers.
And then you have when Hope shows rescue. Up. But when Hope showed up, who was behind her with the Ravagers showing up?
Who?
Howard the Duck.
Oh, Jesus. Really?
Like, yeah. So
there's a useful character to have in the middle of a battle.
It's a blink and you miss it moment. But when
Hope definitely missed it because I don't care about Howard the Duck.
Well, I love Howard the Duck. But when Hope shows up, and you see the Ravagers behind her, you see Howard the Duck walking with this massive gun that's bigger than him, ready to go to war. When you see it, you laugh because you find it so ridiculous to see this little tiny duck with this massive gun.
What? I'll have to rewatch it again. But anyway, Pepper shows up as rescue, and then your Doctor Strange looks at Wong's like, is this everyone? And Wong's like, you wanted more?
Which unfortunately, this isn't in the movie. It's a fan-made edit. But the fan-made edit actually continues the scene where you have all of the Marvel Netflix characters show up. And then you start bringing in the DC universe. And
no!
Then you start, like you start bringing in like Michael Keaton's Batman. And
stop.
It's hilarious. You bring in Blade.
Make it stop.
It's I loved it. It was hilarious. The best one was when somebody had Deadpool show up and John Wick.
Nice. All right. So Scott goes big and he has Rocket, Banner, and Rhodey in the palm of his hand. And he's got like War Machine armor again. The Avengers plus... I have this as Avenger plus Hammer Assemble. I don't know why. But basically, you know, Steve's wielding the hammer, and this is actually where we see the line Avengers Assemble. And so the two armies.
And there's a great buildup, though, because, like, when he does the Avengers and then the hammer comes to him.
The hammer comes
right before he says Assemble and the hammer comes to him and he catches it, Tony looks over at him and like, wait, what? Because remember, during the entire time that Steve is fighting with Mjolnir, Tony's knocked out.
Knocked out, yeah.
He doesn't know that Steve is wielding Mjolnir at this point. So Cap goes, Avengers, boom, Mjolnir comes to hand. Tony goes, what? Can somebody explain this to me? Oh, wait, we got to go fight.
Yep, Assemble. Pretty much.
And then they go to war. It's so great. It's like, it's another blink and you miss it moment with the thing with Tony.
So we see Rescue and Tony, Steve and Thor exchanging weapons. Give me that one. I like Thor. He's like, oh, give me, because what ends up happening is Thor has Mjolnir and Steve has Stormbreaker. And Thor's like, no. You take the little one. I need this one. Tony sees Peter and Peter's like, I can't believe this. Like at first I was like dusting and then I came back and Dr. Strange says, it's been 5 years. Let's go. And they hug and it's very sweet. Even though I hate how Tony has been inserted into Peter's storyline, but
it's a great moment, though.
It is a great moment. I'm not harking on it. They also confirmed that, you know, Peter realized he was being dusted, which is just, oh, that's worse. Quill is rescued by Gamora, and he realizes that it's not his Gamora, and she hurts him. And there's just this look like...
Well, the first time you missed, but the second time you got both of them.
Yeah, but the funny part is Gamora kind of looks at Nebula like him. And Neb is like, yeah.
It was either him or a tree.
Tree, yep. So Clint is still running with the gauntlet, meanwhile. Sam, they need to send the stones back before Thanos can get them and use them. But Thanos destroyed the quantum tunnel when he arrived with his giant ship. But Scott says they have another one. He's like, does anybody see where I parked? Valkyrie sees it. She's flying on her unicorn, Pegasus, whatever. Valkyrie sees it, and Hope and Hank are on it. Cap, And Hope actually says, "We're on it, Cap," which is a nice moment from
it. But the one line that Valkyrie says is like, "Oh, I found it, but you aren't gonna like where it is." You're gonna like where
it's parked, yeah. So Doctor Strange, so Steve's like, or Tony interacts with Doctor Strange. He's like, "So what happens?" He's like, "If I tell you, then it won't happen."
Yeah, you better be right.
Hope and Scott find the van, but they need to hotwire it. Thanos spots the gauntlet. Clint is rescued by T'Challa, who then takes the gauntlet. Thanos goes to a
great moment, though, because T'Challa goes, "Clint, give it to me."
Yep.
What happened when they first met in Civil War? Clint introduced himself going,
"Oh, he's like, I don't care.
And I don't care." This proved that he really did care. The little things that matter.
Anyway, so Thanos goes to attack T'Challa, but we have Wanda arrives, and Wanda's pissed. Peter takes the gauntlet from T'Challa. Wanda is, in fact, the most powerful Avenger. Fight me. Because she, first of all, she is able to do what nobody else does, and that is actually entrap and actually make Thanos scared for his life.
To the point where he literally tells his own ships to shoot down upon themselves, and they go, "Are you sure about this?"
So Wanda says, you know, "You took everything from me," and Thanos is like, "I don't even know who you are," and Wanda's like, "You will." And the energy and the crushing, like, this is the Wanda Maximoff I have been waiting for. So yeah, she literally is about to crush Thanos, but he tells him to rain fire. And she gets knocked down. Wizards protect the troops, and they have their like little sling shields. Pepper says that there's something about water, so Strange is on it because the water starts getting pushed into the cavern.
Yeah, because one of the missiles hit the water a specific way, and it was starting to cascade into the battle itself. So
yep, and Peter's meanwhile being overwhelmed, and Steve's like, "Hey, Queens," and sends the hammer to pull him, and Peter just like thwips to the hammer. It's really cute. Pepper and the Valkyries are fighting. Peter gets knocked back. Rocket and Groot, like, because they're trying to deal with the onslaught of these rockets. So Groot and Rocket kind of have this moment where Rocket tries to cover Groot. And then everything stops for a moment. And the ship starts firing at something else. Oh, come on. It's Carol Danvers. And she just like destroys the ship. Scott gets the truck moving. Carol takes the gauntlet.
In a great moment.
Yeah, Peter's like, Peter Parker. Where Carol's like, he's like, "Hi, I'm Peter Parker." She's like, "Hi, Peter Parker.
You got something for me?"
Yeah, so Carol takes the gauntlet, but she isn't sure how she's going to get through it all. And there's that badass.
No, Peter wasn't sure.
Peter's like, right. And so he's like, "Well, how are you going to get through it?" And Wanda comes down like, "Don't worry, she has help."
Wanda said, "Don't worry." Okoye said she has help.
Somebody says it. Carol soars. Thanos gets blasted, and destroys the time machine or the quantum machine. Tony fights Thanos. Thor sends lightning. Steve fights Thanos, knocks him back. Carol gets tossed aside a little bit, but she comes back really strong. Thanos grabs the Power Stone out of the thing and knocks back Carol because that's the only way he can actually punch her.
Because, like, he went to headbutt her and she was just like,
"It didn't do anything.
Nah, brah, you got to bring more than that."
Tony goes again so Thanos gets the gauntlet, but Tony goes at him, and instead of taking the gauntlet, he takes the stones.
Because it was the same nanotech as his suit.
Yeah, and Thanos is something like, "Oh, I am inevitable," or whatever. "I am destiny," or whatnot. And
no, Tony, he said, "I'm inevitable." Yeah. Click.
And does this, that, nothing. Says, "Yeah, well, I am Iron Man," and all of the Chitauri and enemies and Thanos.
The interesting thing is that as he says that, you actually see the stones on his hand actually align into the proper positions on his hand as he's saying, "I am Iron Man," and then. Boom. And apparently Robert Downey Jr. came out and said this in an interview, but apparently in one of the takes, the line wasn't going to be "I am Iron Man" because like they did multiple takes of it with different lines. apparently the original line in the script, and this is probably the only time we're going to say the F word on the thing, but the line was, "You're so fucked."
Oh, I get the I am Iron Man works really well, but it
because it wraps up the story for
because
Tony.
It does. I would have loved a good F bomb.
But the thing is, that was actually that was the actual it, that apparently that was the line in the script.
I am Iron Man does work better.
But yeah, but they used multiple different lines when they did the takes, and I am Iron Man was just one that Tony did it or that Robert did that ended up making the obvious final cut because, you know, as we just said, it makes Tony's story go full circle at that point because that's what he did at the end of Iron Man 1.
Yep. So Thanos is all alone. Tony dies from the stone energy, huh?
Did you see the deleted scene with Tony's death?
Is it the one when he's in the Mind Stone and sees an older version of his daughter? Or is it something else?
No, that's before he dies. That's
or is
after
it the stupid scene where they're all kneeling?
Yeah. I like the scene where they're all kneeling.
I don't. It's pretentious, it's unnecessary, and it's stupid because half of them didn't even know Tony.
Yeah, but it's still a sign of respect.
Yeah, but it's pointless. I'm sorry.
But with the scene that we ended up getting afterwards, it actually made that scene kind of pointless.
Yeah, so Thanos is gone. Tony dies from the stone energy. Rhodey and Peter tells him that they won. Pepper says they're going to be okay and that he can rest, and he dies finally. There's a lot of hinting at Tony's death in this entire movie, so especially in the very beginning of the film.
And one thing to also notice that, remember how we talked about Hulk and Thanos, about the damage to their arms?
Yeah.
If you look at Tony, it's not like you don't know what the damage is to his arm because you see it on his neck and you see it on his face, and he has even worse damage than what Hulk took, than what Thanos took in two snaps. And the other thing that you also notice is that this actually harks back to the very first Iron Man film when he was still in the cave, when he created the little arc reactor for his chest. What was the line that he said when he was with Jensen when he made the little arc reactor? It's going to hold enough power to do something maybe for 15, to do something really big in a very short span of time. And that time was 15 minutes. What did the suit end up doing? And it ended up being able to harness a whole amount of power for a very big moment.
Right.
And
that's a nice little roundup.
And again, just like with the I Am Iron Man line, it's another full circle moment for Tony.
So, yeah. So that's it. The battle's over. They've won. Clint returns to his family. Peter goes back to school and see that his friends have also been snapped. Well, we see Ned. Tony narrates about happy endings as we see Hope, Scott, and Cassie have this nice moment. Shuri, T'Challa, and Mom are there, or like
the queen.
I think they're just in Los Angeles, the queen, yeah.
No, they're in Wakanda.
Is it Wakanda? Okay.
Yeah, they're in Wakanda.
So the narration of Tony is actually a projection of his last will and testament, and that he, I guess, recorded just in case before they powered up the time heist stuff. And this is like Tony's funeral, which is then where we go to. And what's interesting is that they don't have the body. It's just a little wreath with the original arc reactor that Pepper had given him that says proof that Tony Stark has a heart. So it's that same arc reactor. So then we see everyone is there. And the positioning with which everybody stands is actually very interesting. We'll get to that in a second. So we see Aunt May, Pym, Janet, the Guardians, everyone is in their little group. So you have the Iron Man camp, which is Morgan, Pepper, Happy, Rhodey, Thor, Cap, Peter, May, and Hulk, who are like really interconnected to Tony. Yep. Then you have the Ant camp, which is, you know, Hank, Janet, Hope, Scott. Yep. Then you have the Wizard camp, which is just, you know, Wong and Strange. Then you have the Guardians camp, which is everybody except Gamora. Then you have the Wakanda camp, which is again T'Challa, and Okoye and Shuri. Then you have Hawkeye fam. I call this the Hawkeye fam camp, which is just Hawkeye's family. And then you have the spy camp, which I guess this is the Disney Plus camp, which is Falcon, Winter Soldier, and Wanda. But that's not all we see, because then we have the reject camp. This is like the leftover camp of people that don't fit into the box, which is Ross, Maria,
before them, you're missing one.
Oh, Harley Keener, yes. Yep. Oh my God, such an important character. Woo.
I think he'll play an important character down the road.
God, I hope not. I'm sorry, there's just the fandom's insistence that Harley be involved in things like Young Avengers just make me want to see him less. Anyway, but if it turns out he's actually not Harley Keener, that's a fake name, he's actually Nate Richards, that's something I can entertain. Anyway, so you see Harley Keener, and then you see Ross, Maria Hill, Carol Danvers, and Nick Fury. And that's the last thing we see in the shot is Nick Fury. So then you see Wanda and Clint on the water, and they're talking about Nat and Vision and how they know that they've won. Happy has a cute moment with Morgan when he asks, like, do you want something? Are you hungry? And she's like, yeah. He says, like, what do you want to eat? And she says, cheeseburgers, which is, again, that moment of Iron Man 1 where Tony gets back from being kidnapped and whatever and wants an American cheeseburger. Thor is back in Norway, but only briefly. He basically gives Valkyrie the keys to the kingdom, calls for King, and decides he's going to head off with the Guardians. And that I guess the Guardians are going to go after Gamora. Thor mispronounces Quill's name and calls him Quail or something. And Drax and Nebula are like, fight. To fight for leadership.
Mantis is like, ooh, Mantis yes, like, use yes. knives.
Yeah, blasters or knives. It's a question of who's in charge, and Peter's in charge.
Of course.
This is the literal worst thing in this movie. I'm getting, not the Peter and Thor part, this part. So Steve is going to go back to return all of the stones. They miss Nat. You can see debris from the compound being cleared in the background. Steve and Bucky have a hug, and Steve's like, you know, don't do anything stupid while I'm gone. Bucky says, you're taking all the stupid with you, which is hearkening to Captain America the First Avenger. So Steve vanishes, and then Banner's like, bring him back in 3, 2, 1, but nothing happens. And Sam's kind of upset, like, oh my God, get him back. But Bucky sees an old man sitting on a bench.
At this point, he sees something. He doesn't.
Well, it's clearly an outline of an old dude. Come on.
Yeah.
Bucky tells Sam to go, because obviously Bucky knows. Steve puts the stones back and decide to try some of that life that Tony was telling him to get. I love this line. I hate this plot point. Anyway, Sam isn't sure he's ready to live in a world without Captain America, and Steve's just like, okay, here you go. So Sam becomes, basically Steve is giving Sam the shield to be Captain America. Question, didn't Thanos destroy the shield?
Yeah, but you don't know how many in stockpile there were.
Valid. Maybe Shuri had one on stock order.
Tony had a stockpile that he didn't talk about.
So, yeah, that's true, because they did read his last will and testament. Maybe there's Captain America shield in there. Anyway, so Sam is Captain America now, and Steve is keeping the girl to himself. And then the last scene is this cute little 50s music and Steve and Peggy dancing, which makes me nauseous. Thank you to Marvel for crediting accurately Jack Kirby and Stan Lee.
Well, see, here's the thing. They've never had an issue crediting Jack Kirby on stuff.
They just didn't really do it as often as they should have.
Well, think of it like this. It's never been as bad to the level of the way it was with DC and Batman.
I'm not talking about DC and Batman. I'm not comparing. But yes, DC screwed Bill Finger over hard. No, when it
DC
yes.
didn't screw him over. Bob Kane screwed him over.
Okay, fine. Bob Kane screwed him over so that DC could continue to screw him over for years to come.
Yeah.
And that's not even counting the royalties and Siegel and Schuster and Neil Adams. I know all of this. I know. That's not the point. I'm happy that Jack Kirby gets the credit he deserves.
Yeah.
they do the classic style credits. You have like the OG credits. And then at the end of this, so everybody else's credits actually go first. And then you get to the original Avengers. And you actually have the Avengers music as their credits roll with their autographs, which is a nice touch.
I really liked how they did that as a way to wrap things up for those characters. Yeah.
And then the last thing you actually hear after all the credits is that metal clanking sound, which could be a couple of things. It could be harkening back to Iron Man 1 when Tony was building the original suit in the desert.
Which is essentially what was confirmed.
Which is what was confirmed. But there's, of course, other much, you know, dumb fan theories that this is like Harley Keener building a new suit or somebody else building a new suit, blah, blah, blah. I don't care.
No, they made it where it was, again, a Tony wrap-up.
So I have a couple notes before I talk about what I loved and didn't love about this movie. So obviously RDJ is the only person that actually read the entire script. Kind of makes sense.
Well, that's because of multiple reasons. One, well, I think for RDJ and Chris Evans, because I think he was the other one who read the script in full.
I hope so.
I think it was actually in their contracts that they actually had to read the full script.
Good.
Whereas everyone else obviously only got like their lines, so they didn't really know what was going on because they wanted to keep it as secretive as possible for the film, and especially for somebody like Tom Holland, who doesn't know how to shut up when he's getting interviewed on things.
Anyway, I guess that kind of goes back to the overall point that while I like the fact that Marvel keeps some things very guarded, I think they took it a little bit too far with the secrecy. I understand why, but just a little too far. But so what's interesting is this is the only film to actually have the original lineup of the Avengers at any given time, which is Iron Man, Thor, Hulk, Ant-Man, and Wasp. It's not the same Ant-Man and Wasp, but it still counts. Scott's storage unit is actually called 616, which is the main Marvel continuity universe. And Wanda was confirmed by Kevin Feige as being the most powerful Avenger. So suck it, everybody. Okay, let's talk about what I loved about this movie. The humor is solid. I really enjoyed the harkenings and Easter eggs back to previous films. I like the fact that they addressed the whole, what was the Ancient One doing at the Sanctum Sanctorum in New York? Like, why weren't the Wizards doing anything in 2012? We know that they were. We just didn't see it because the focus was on the Avengers.
Yeah. And not like that, but in the Avengers, they even made it known that they're trying to keep it within a perimeter for what they're doing. So, like, whatever maybe little stragglers you had, that's when the Ancient One took care of them.
Yes. So, what was the plot point I told you to remind me about that I was going to come back to?
That's a great question. We were just talking.
You did forget.
Okay, we were talking about a 3-hour-long movie.
That's true. All right, it's fine. I remember. So let's talk about this. I liked Tony's arc overall. He is the guy who was going to cut the wire so that somebody, you know, instead of letting somebody crawl over him, like Steve had mentioned, and this is him making the ultimate sacrifice. So it does come full circle. From the arrogant jerk who got kidnapped in the desert in Afghanistan to a hero.
Yeah, and if you look at it from the first Avengers film, I mean, because as you just said, you know, Steve said the line to the Tony that, you know, he was going to be the guy who was just going to find any way around it. He wasn't going to be the one to carry the ball for the touchdown, essentially. Tony did it at the end of the first Avengers film when he threw the nuke up at the Chitauri mothership.
But I think that proved Tony's point more than Steve's, that there's always another answer. So I don't have any problems with Tony's arc in this film, even though I think the plot of him and the whole, like, protect what he has now is what actually hurts this film, because it ultimately what happens is you don't bring everybody back. I guess they did it as a way to only bring back the people that were snapped, which again leaves Heimdall, half of Asgard, and Vision dead. But the other problem that I have with this movie, and I've been hinting at it for a while, is Steve's plot. I think ultimately what would have been better, and I know when you and I originally talked about this film, I said this, but I'm going to say it again because it's the whole point was about how Steve needed to get a life. He says that he tells Nat that they both need to get a life. Tony tells him that he just needs to get a life. And there's another reference to it later on. What should have happened is Steve should have just hung up the shield, given it to Sam like normal, and the last shot of this movie, instead of the stupid freaking Peggy moment, should have been Steve riding in on a highway to get a life.
I don't have an issue with it, and here's the reason why. You have to be, you know, with what you came up with, while that would have been good, it would have left the door open for Chris Evans to come back. And Chris Evans,
there's still a door left over if Chris Evans wants to come back. But said that.
Yeah, but the thing is that he doesn't want to come back, and I think he was happy with this.
I don't care. I don't care.
Because you hate Peggy Hill.
I don't hate Peggy. Peggy is fine. I just don't want her with Steve. And this isn't even ship or goggles. It's just like, the whole thing from way back in Winter Soldier was the fact that Steve was perfectly, like, life wasn't perfect, but he was happy to be in the present. No polio's good, you know. They used to boil everything. And Steve essentially abandons his friends. And I get, like, it's supposed to juxtapose Tony, because Tony does the selfless thing and then Steve does the selfish thing to go back in time to be with Peggy. But I hate it. I absolutely hate it. For so many reasons. But I think Steve needed a life. Steve was perfectly capable of retiring. And that was one of the things he struggled with. I think him seeing Tony with a family, being normal, should have helped him find a family in the present, not in the past. And there's so many ways that they could have done this. Sowing seeds in previous films, which they, I guess, sort of tried to do with Sharon, but that just, like, their relationship in the comics failed miserably. But ultimately, I think Steve should have stayed in the present, or he should have just died. Like, I can't. I hate the plot thread. I hated it the first time I saw it. I still hated it. But overall, I think the film is still solid, and it's actually interesting because you can kind of watch it in chunks, because the film has chunks. It's the pre-5 years later chunk, the post-5 years later chunk, the time travel chunk, and then the battle chunk. I do think there are some things that could have been cut out of this film to make it a little bit shorter. But, you know, the cut that we got, I think, is phenomenal. I think it works. It's fine. And, yeah, I have some gripes with it. There's a lot of action at the very end of the film, which we knew. And we don't really acknowledge all of the things that happened with Wakanda. It would have been fun, I think, if the film had actually started kind of like the final battle. Both took place in Wakanda. But I get how they did everything. But I think it would have been fun to see them in the Infinity War realm of where the movie ended and going about it, but
I think at that point, you know, it made better sense to do the battle at the compound.
Yeah.
In the end, because it's like, I mean, I understand what you're saying when it comes to, like, oh, Infinity War with, you know, they're in Wakanda. But by the time we got to, like, the after credit scenes with, like, Fury with the pager, and then, you know, then with the Avengers with the pager, they're at the compound at that point. They're not even at Wakanda anymore. And
true.
So like, they've moved away from Wakanda at that point. So
no, I get that. I'm just saying that, like, it would have been interesting if ultimately they ended up back where they started, in a way.
Yeah, I just don't know how it would have worked, especially with the fact that Shuri was gone, because she was one of the ones that were dusted.
I think that's also the mistake. I think Shuri should not have been dusted. But then again, I don't know. I guess it just kind of depends on which time travel theory you prefer, the changing the past one or the not changing the past one.
Yeah.
And I guess they consulted with, like, actual quantum physicists and whatnot. But I don't know. I still find it I find parts of it frustrating, but it's still an enjoyable film, and it is pretty epic. Like, anytime I see, you know, Steve grabbing the hammer flying back to Steve, it's still epic. Like, I remember everybody freaking out in the movie theater. I'm like, I knew this was coming. First time I saw it, actually, as soon as Thor grabs his hammer, I'm like, wait, does this mean Steve will get a chance to use the hammer? And I wasn't disappointed in that regard. I was disappointed in other things in Steve's story, but not that. So with that, Michael, can you tell us I think we all know how this movie did in the box office, but how does it rank in IMDb rating?
So real quick, this movie clocked in at 3 hours and, well, here it's saying 1 minute, but it's really 3 hours and 2 minutes. Which, for the record, when they announced the time of how long the movie was, everyone was going, oh God, it's going to be 3 hours. We don't want to go take a bathroom break because it's a long movie and you're eating and drinking during the film. All of us wrestling fans have been trained for this moment for many years, thanks to WWE having Monday Night Raw be 3 hours long. And they used to have a runover time of 15, sometimes even 20 minutes long. So we were ready for your asses.
And Lord of the Rings fans just went, oh, only 3 hours?
Yeah, well, when they got the extended cuts.
Yeah.
But that was on DVD mostly. But so they could pause it. Couldn't do that in theaters. So you have 3 hours and 12 minutes, or 2 minutes. With an IMDb score of an 8.4 out of 10. I should note that when we did the Experience episode, which was like right after the movie came out, mm-hmm. this film was almost nearly a perfect 10 out of 10 at that time. So in a little over a year, it's dropped from like a 10 score to an 8.4.
How does that rank against the other films?
That's a great question. Let me take a look. Infinity War was an 8.4. For some reason, it's not giving me other Marvel movies. It's giving me Joker, Back to the Future, and Jumanji, The Next Level.
Funny.
And the Shawshank Redemption.
Funny.
Thor Ragnarok was a 7.9. Now it's going to be Independence Day and The Dark Knight and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Green Mile.
It's fine. So I will say, I think that's a fair rating. I think Infinity War was better. I think it was a tighter film. But it's interesting because the two movies were shot back to back.
Yeah, they were shot literally together.
Yeah. So, but anyway, I think that's a fair rating. I think it works.
All righty. So, with that, start with me, then go to you. You can find me on the social medias at Twitter at TheLindenBaum75, Facebook at facebook.com/X95Productions, and, of course, everything else for me at TXHTHockey.com. And for this show, /nerdy-notions, and keep in mind you're going to be seeing now an abundance of hockey coverage with the NHL playoffs starting on August 1st. We just dropped the final team previews of all 24 teams, and next week we're going to start the qualifying round matchup previews. So Shots was just shaking her head on like, you poor unfortunate souls. But yeah.
With that, you can find me at geekgirl101.tumblr.com, geekycaptain on Instagram, and on my new WordPress, geekycaptainwrites.wordpress.com, where you can read all of my latest reviews on some of the key Empire issues that are coming out from Marvel. So thank you so much for listening. And with that, we're going to ask you to bear with us for one more important Marvel film, where we thwip across Europe with Spider-Man Far From Home.